Morning, family. Good to see all of you this morning. If you're visiting, please fill out one of those cards that Alan mentioned at the beginning, so we can have a record of your attendance. Todd looks forward to collecting those up every week. I know that you don't want to let him down. Even if you don't know who he is, you don't want to let him down. So it's interesting. We've been looking through this whole 2020 theme, seeing God with 2020 vision. We've moved into seeing our purpose with 2020 vision as we're closing out the year. And I thought, boy, it's November 1st. What a great time to talk about everybody's favorite subject. And I know it's your favorite because that's all I hear people talking about. You know what the subject is? Really? It's politics, man. And it's interesting, I was over at the Mort House yesterday afternoon helping out with some roof repair on Mitch and Joe's house, and we were getting down on off the roof onto a ladder, and I told Mitch, I said, hey, just giving you a heads up, if I fall off the ladder and break my neck, the sermon's on politics tomorrow, and you got it. Yeah, so I don't know if you're thankful that I didn't fall off the ladder and break my neck, or if, I don't know, we'll just let you guys make that determination as you get into the lesson this morning. Now, I'm not going to try to insult your intelligence today. I'm really not. It may happen. But just know that as we're going through these things, we're going to present some biblical truths and concepts that we need to be paying attention to, especially in this arena of politics. And I know that it's in everybody's face, and everybody has been praying that Tuesday cannot come quickly enough so that they can get their radio back and not have to watch television without every ad being about Teresa Greenfield or Joni Ernst or whoever it is that's running for the different offices that are out there. We want to go back to our Colgate and Charmin commercials so we can live life as Americans, right? But when you think about the United States and you think about our history and everything that has gone on, Alan dealt a lot with just religious history and religious idea history this morning in class, which was fun. But when you think of just the nation's history, can you think of another people who have not enjoyed such a favorable history of benevolent rule as the United States? We're pretty tops on that list, aren't we? And the people of America, those that live in this country, enjoy lots of protections and lots of freedom that a lot of people in this world really don't have. And they don't get to enjoy. And there's a reason for that. And Jeremy's opinion, the reason for that is in the fact that the government that was founded upon ideals that respected and embraced godly principles. That's where protection and freedom are actually found, whether we recognize that or acknowledge that or not. It's found living by godly principles. And this, again, I'm not saying that the founding fathers were all Christians as we would define the word Christian today. Yeah, but I'm also not saying that there were no men of conscience or integrity who founded the government. But I want us to be thinking about God's influence and how prevalent it was during that time so that freedom and justice, it was so prevalent that freedom and justice had to be cornerstones of the American system. Morality was seen to be as essential to the well-being of society. George Washington said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars and remove religion and morality from politics. John Quincy Adams said, the highest glory of the American Revolution was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity. Sounds strange to hear those words today, doesn't it? To say that government and Christianity, that government and godly principles were working hand in hand, and that was the pillars and foundation of a nation? Yeah, especially in light of what we were talking about in my Wednesday night class last week, of how we have been sold the lie that these two things actually cannot coexist. That they can't work together. They're complete opposite and opposed to each other. In fact, when you look at our government elected officials today, I don't even think they understand these concepts. I really don't. And even if they understand it, let's just be honest, we really don't see them practicing it. And I know the biggest argument, and this is going to be my line of thinking for this morning, just to give you a little bit of a warning, The biggest argument in politics today is often it's a backward thought process. It's backward. That they will say, so as the leader goes, so goes the country. Right? You've heard that argument? If so-and-so is elected president, well, that's the way the country's going to go. And that's backward thinking. All right? It's actually the opposite. As the country thinks, so goes the country. As the populace thinks, so goes the country. All right? Because the populace is going to put into that position a man who most embodies their ideals. That's how it works. Yeah, and if you doubt me, read your Bible. Go back to the scriptures in the Old Testament where they're like, we want a king so that we can be like all of the nations around us. We need somebody to go fight our wars for us. We need to, and not actually realizing that what they're saying is what we really want more than anything is a guy that's going to tax us heavily and conscript our children. That's really what they said they wanted. And guess what they got? They got a guy who taxed them heavily and conscripted their children. As the nation went, so did the leadership. And that's how it works in our country as well. Because the way our system is established is that an elective representative, I see your eyes gloss and Jeremy's going into politics and government on this. Just bear with me here, guys. Do we understand we don't live in a democracy? I see some of you guys' eyebrows going up. You know what a democracy is. I've used this definition before. A democracy is nothing more than three wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. Okay? The voice of the minority in a democracy has no equal power. We live, according to our founding fathers, in what is called a representative republic, which allows the voice of the minority to have the same weight in debate and discussion as the voice of the majority. That's how this system works. We elect representatives, okay? And an elective representative is a person who you have given your political power of attorney to. That's how representation works. So, for instance, I like Jared Pienaar a lot. He's a fantastic individual. His goatee is of the highest quality. And I think he would do a fantastic job voicing my thoughts, principles, ideals, and concerns in the public arena. He will speak out for me. And so I go to Jared and I say, hey, Jared, because of your goatee and your fantastic children, you are going to be my voice as my elected representative. And Jared says, thank you for your support. And he's going to move forward. And when he says something, guess who just said that? I did. But wait a minute. What if Jared said something that I actually don't believe? Doesn't matter. I gave him my power of attorney. But it's really not that big a deal, right? Politics has earned the reputation of being dirty. Do you know why it's earned the reputation of being dirty? Because we made it dirty. We made it dirty. And it's become this way because there are too many people who are either not willing to learn what the true purpose of government is or are willfully choosing to act ignorantly, even though they know the truth because it gets them what they want. So the problem is not only the upper level of politics that act without consent to truth or reality, but also the voter. And I'm convinced that there are too many people in this world who claim Christ as Lord who do not understand the purpose of government. So let's spend just a few minutes reminding ourselves what the purpose of this government, of what government is, because the Bible is very clear, guys. It's very clear on the purpose of civil government, and it tells us as Christians that this is the way government was designed to be, and at the same time calling us to be in submission to those governments, right? You look at Romans chapter 13 and verse 1. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. This becomes the foundation for us here, guys. This is what God's telling us. You got to obey the law. Now, we'll get into some other aspects of that here in a minute, but understand the basic principle here is obedience and respect, which is kind of a fascinating thing, because how many of us would respect the government, let's say, if we lived in a communist nation? Now, sorry, I got ahead of myself. We'll come back to that one. 1 Peter 2, 13 and 14. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. Go back to Romans 13. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. You want to have no fear of authority? Raise your hand. Who wants to have no fear of authority? Here's Paul's answer. Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience's sake. So we look at Paul and Peter's explanations here, showing us that the purpose of government is not that rulers should be a terror to good works, but should be a terror to evil. I made this statement on Wednesday night. I'm going to say it again. It's not the government's role to promote social programs. It's not the government's role to create jobs. It's not the government's role to do all of the things that we, as an electorate, have allowed our government to do. The government's role is to punish the evildoer and give praise to the one who does good. That's it. And the sad commentary about all of this is that we have allowed representatives who we have given our power of attorney to go away from God's intended purpose of government. Period. Who's to blame for the state of the nation, guys? We are. We are. And whether you like that or not, it's the truth. The governments of this world, God has designed to be, notice what Paul said, his ministers to do these things, to act in his stead when necessary. This is a noble purpose. And I'll tell you why it's so noble, because it allows protection and freedom. We go back to those two pillars. But when a government becomes a supporter of evil and a threat to good, it has abandoned God's given purpose. And so the question that often comes up is to how people in politics can take the positions they do on certain issues when they claim to be a Christian or actually claim to Christ as Lord in all of these things. And we often hear, and I said this earlier, that politics and religion don't mix. And again, it's not because they shouldn't. It's because they've become so incompatible. Alan has dealt with this, was that 2 weeks ago or last week with the, I can't remember, but it was fantastic. The idea of the irreconcilable ideas in a person's mind that they just, well, whatever, I don't have to make a decision on that. And they allow those things to move forward. Cognizant dissidence is what he was talking about. And so our government leaders will take, for instance, positions on issues like homosexuality and abortion. And they'll make certain stands on those issues. And I'll tell you why they make certain stands on those issues. And here's why. Because they either lack the moral intelligence to know what is right, or they lack the moral courage to do what is right. And more than likely, the reality is it's a combination of both. One politician said, "I don't favor abortion, but I do favor freedom of choice." And honestly, he's not the only one that's trying to hide behind these types of moronic statements. Right? Because this statement, then there's others like it. We could go down a laundry list, and we're not going to, but we could. Really are revealing nothing more than moral cowardice. That's all it is. Because here's the deal. If something is wrong, when is it wrong? Is it always wrong? Or is it only wrong depending on what society is telling you? We've used this argument in our discussions before. If society had said, and by the way, they did, that exterminating Jews en masse was perfectly okay, then Hitler was doing a righteous work. And he's good to go with that, right? Because society said it was fine. Is it? Who dictates what's right and wrong? God does. And if we believe something is wrong, then guess when it's wrong? All the time. If we believe something is right, by the way, guess when it's right? All the time. Government doesn't get to give us, isn't part of God's purpose for government to give us the option of choosing what is right or wrong also, by the way. Those things have already been determined. And it's certainly not the duty of the government to take my money to encourage and assist those who kill others either. But, Jeremy, come on now. You're living in a pie-in-the-sky dreamland world where it's all blue skies, unicorns, glitter, rainbows. You know that that's just not how it is because you can't legislate morality, Jeremy. Anybody heard that one? That you can't legislate morality? Let's just be honest. That's stupid. That's a stupid statement that has been repeated so often that thoughtless people just assume that it's true. Now, I will concede that legislation cannot make the person have the right kind of heart. It can't. But, and it's not going to stop all immoral activity, but when you look at legislation against immorality, it puts the government back in the business that God had determined it to be in, right? And the fact is, we legislate morality all the time. Do we not? Is it illegal to abuse drugs? Why? Why is it illegal to abuse drugs? Certainly not because of any kind of moral clause on that, right? That can't be why it's illegal. But it does damages to it damages families. You're right, it does. Is that not moral? Now, okay, that one was a little silly, right? All right, I get it. What about civil rights laws? Civil rights laws legislate morality? Yeah, they do. Do you know how they legislate morality? Alan brought it up a little bit in class this morning about hiring practices, for instance. I cannot discriminate based on age, race, or gender of who I will put into a position if I own a business. And if I do, well, I violated the law. Why is that? Because morality principles tell me that we're all created equal in the eyes of God and they all need to be treated as such. That's legislation of morality. And so those that argue that morality can't be legislated, here's what they really mean. They're only really meaning that they're talking about that kind of legislation that would interfere with their own lifestyle. That's really all they're talking about. Okay? Has nothing to do with truth, reality, and what God has said. It's what they want in all of this. And so this is the world we find ourselves living in, right? Comfortable, isn't it? To know that this is the state of the world that we find ourselves in, and please don't misunderstand me. The state of the world that we find ourselves in now is no different than, say, the state of the world that Jesus lived in. Yeah, the state of the world that David lived in, that Moses lived in. Yeah, we can go back throughout history, and I think that we find the world looking very similar through the course of how people are called to live and what is happening on the national scale. So maybe it might be good for us at this point to define our role in all of this and see what God's actually calling His people to be in the society that we find ourselves in. Because I think that we need to realize something first and foremost, and I'm going to take that off. We need to realize this first and foremost. I'm going to say it slow. Government does not provide rights and freedom. I'm going to say that again. Government does not provide rights and freedom. And that is where we need to begin in any discussion about our role as God's people in the world that we find ourselves in. Understanding, government does not provide rights and freedoms. When you go back and you look at Romans chapter 13, where we read that just a little while ago, right? The first part, as we're adding this to, well, and so while government doesn't define rights and freedom, it doesn't provide rights and freedom, it does place certain responsibilities on our shoulders through all of this, right? Paul will say that we need to be obedient to rulers, that these rulers are from God, and that we should not obey because of fear, but for conscience sake, right? But if you look at what, for instance, Timothy says in 1 Timothy, he says, listen, you're supposed to be doing this and being in subjection to everybody in authority so you can live a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness, right? That there's a benefit and purpose to the responsibilities that are placed on our shoulders. Honesty is also mentioned there in Timothy as well. It's placed on our shoulders of how we're supposed to be living. And we're expected to act in such a way, God has this expectation from us, that we're supposed to act in such a way that we use the most of each opportunity, including legislative and political. Okay, look at what Peter said in 1 Peter 2. Act as free men. Because who is the most free person on the planet, guys? Who is the most free person on the planet? The one who has been saved by the blood of Jesus. They are the most free person on the planet. Does that mean that there are free people living in a communist government? Does that mean that there are free people living in a socialist government? Does that mean that there are free people living in a representative republic? Does that mean that they're in dictatorships? So it must not mean that government has anything to say about how we live as Christians. Because I can live as a Christian under any system. And that government doesn't dictate whether or not I'm a Christian. So I'm a free man. And I will act as a free man. And I'm not going to use my freedom as a covering for evil. I'm going to use it because I'm a slave of God. By the way, that's our memory verse for the week. Because we are free, we use our freedom to operate and live as God's bond slaves. And I think there are too many in the church, out of the church, don't really care at this point. There are too many that use their freedom as a covering for evil in the way they interact in the political process and with their governments. And they do this because they won't apply the necessary principles to each and every situation and individual. Our role is a little bit further clarified in Titus chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. Titus, Paul's writing to Titus, he says, remind them, that would be us if we were sitting there in Titus's living room, by the way. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed. Why are we got to be ready for every good deed? Well, if the purpose of government is to praise those who do good. Oh, well, then we're all ready for it. To be ready for every good deed, to malign, Oh, hold on, Jeremy. You're about to start talking about things you probably shouldn't be talking about if the subject is politics. To malign no one. What's our social media practice like on this one when talking about candidates that we don't like? I'll leave that one to you. To malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing every consideration for all men. So we find ourselves working within the law, attentive to the rules and the regulations and doing all of those things, with an understanding that God's purpose can still be fulfilled in government. And that the law in our society can be changed. It can protect our values. It can actually turn back to the way that God had dictated it to be. And I'm afraid that at times Satan will sell us a lie that says, well, you know, we can read these things, but those were written so long ago, they didn't have to deal with all of the problems that we have to deal with today. There's just so much going on back then that this just went way beyond what they have, what we have to deal with in our current society. And Christians, you know, there was no real issue of interacting with the law or anything like that and government because they didn't have any rights. Okay. When Paul and Silas were in prison in Acts chapter 16, right? Do you guys remember the story? They get thrown in jail, and what do they say? Hey, by the way, guys, is this just normal how you treat Roman citizens? You're a Roman citizen? Yeah. Yeah. Born into it. Was the response, by the way. They knew their rights. They knew how to operate peaceably, respectfully, within the system that they found themselves living in. Do we? Or are we very much content to just be spoon-fed how we're supposed to behave based on the number or the letter after a person's name? That we can and should make our influence known. It should be felt in the local, the state, the national levels, everything in all of this, because we are a people who speak what we believe, and we are unwilling to give our governmental power of authority to someone that we know won't do it. You know why we've lost crucial battles in the past politically? You know why? Because we don't fight. We don't say anything. You'll lose every battle you don't fight. And here's the absolute truth of the matter as we get into our closing time together. Politicians may not care one whit about what God says, but you know who they do care about and what they say? Us. They do care about that. They care about, and they usually take notice about what the voters say. So we find ourselves in a sick society, which is nothing new, okay? And that's okay, because God's promises are guaranteed to us no matter what type of society we actually find ourselves living in, and we can take great solace and comfort in that. Yeah, that it doesn't matter what's the state of the government or the type of government that we find ourselves living in, those have no bearing on God fulfilling His promises and keeping them to us. But we find ourselves living in a sick society, and I can appreciate that and understand that. And I think that what we find ourselves living in is a society who has aligned themselves with lies and things that go against reality, and that's what's formulating a lot of the opinions and thought processes in our country. So let me ask you some questions as we close our time out. Who is the moral compass in your sphere of influence? The people that you're around, that you spend the most time with daily, whether this is at work, at school, whatever it is, who is the moral compass in that group? Who dictates decisions? Who's the opinion maker? I love that phrase. Who's the opinion maker in your group? Because God is calling us to be that moral compass. He's calling us to be His people right here, right now, operating under the principles that He has laid out for us to live by. Society is sick because it has gotten behind a political will that does not stand on godly principles. Look, all right, one more verse. Acts 4. Is this the attitude that we take as we're operating and living in the world as the moral compass to those that God has put around us? Most of us are familiar enough with the story, but here we got Peter and John. They're in front of the council. They've been told, listen, you can't speak truth anymore. I don't want you doing that. And I'll tell you why I don't want you doing it, because it completely goes against how I want to live, is basically the council's argument here. And Peter and John, they stand there, chests out proudly, or at least this is how I imagine them doing it, standing there proudly with their chest out, and they say, you know what, here's the deal. Whether it's right in the sight of God to give heed to you rather than God, you go ahead and be the judge on that one. But we cannot stop speaking what we have seen and heard. I can't take a step off of the pillar of truth. I can't remove myself from the altar of reality and truth. It dictates everything I say, everything I do. Now, if you want to have a different idea on that, you go, girl. But as for me, I will do what God says. I will not allow a godless person to dictate my godly life. This is our responsibility as salt and light. City on a hill can't be hidden, guys. You don't put a lamp under a bushel. And when salt has lost its saltiness, it is only good for one thing: to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. When we make the claim of Jesus as Lord, when we stand before men and make the claim and confession that Jesus is Lord, we are attaching our loyalty to Him. We are attaching our entire being to Him. That we are saying, in essence, when we make that confession is that Jesus is Lord and my Savior, that His thoughts will be my thoughts. His ways will be my ways. And while I find myself operating in a society and living under a governmental system that He did not have the opportunity to live under, it doesn't change the way that we behave. We have sold our soul to Him, actually. Yeah, because He bought it. We're bought and paid for. We've sold our souls to Him, guys. Do not allow a misplaced loyalty to a political party to supersede that. Be who God is calling you to be. Fulfill your role. We can do it. That might mean sacrifice. That might mean that as we stand for truth, as Alan had talked about in our class this morning, we may find somebody saying, you can't say that, and if you continue to say it, I'm going to kill you. And then we say, well, you got to find me first, sucker. And you... It may mean that you lose your job because of it. Are there worse things that can happen if we fail to stand for truth? Or do we allow fear of the small things to cause us to compromise? Well, I don't want to lose my job, so I'm not going to stand for truth on this one. You know what the master says about that, right? Don't be afraid of those guys that can, hurt you physically. What you need to be afraid of is the one who can cut you down to the spirit and soul and can destroy those things. Because in all honesty, let's just use the example I said about losing your job. It happens. When people stand on principle, you lose your job. You may even have to go to court over it. Who knows? Who do you think God put on this earth to actually support you through those times? Look around. Darren, I remember when we first moved here, stories of your family. It was Christmas time. You remember? I'm sure you do. You worked for U.S. Cellular at the time, right? It was Christmas time. Darren and Missy are fantastic parents, and they had spent like $7 billion on Christmas presents that year. It's not that much. But they had been prepared to do Christmas with their family. And they had made some purchases to make sure that those things could be done for their children and for their family. And then all of a sudden, Darren shows up and he doesn't have a job one day. Oh, they have a house payment too. And they have to get groceries on the table and they have to do different things. And Darren, the story, if you don't mind me telling it, the story is that there was a lot of stress in Darren's life at that point. Guess who was there to alleviate stress? You don't have to guess. It was the church. Why did the church do that? Why does the church continue to support those who, through circumstance or standing for truth, support those who have fallen into some difficulties because of those things? Because that's who God called us to be. And it makes no difference, no matter the scenario or situation of where we find ourselves in. Let's be a people who are willing to proudly stand, chests out, and say, I will live, breathe, speak, and act according to the way that God has defined the role, and that there is no man on the planet who can tell me otherwise. That I have no fear from the results on Tuesday. I have no fear for the results of anything, because I look to the future and all I see is glory. And that glory is for you and that glory is for me. Make the confession of Jesus as Christ. Let Him infiltrate and soak into every aspect of your life. Let Him be Lord. Believe in His promises. If you haven't done that, when we stand and sing the song that Todd has selected, this is a perfect chance for you to do that. An opportunity for you to take advantage of the grace of God. To make that confession. Be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. Family, maybe you're at a point in your life right now where you've found yourself in compromise to godly principles in the way that He's calling you to live. It's time to make the change. It's time to let go of your fear and embrace the freedom and protection that God provides wholly and truly in your life. You need help with that. You need prayers of the body. You need counsel from the elders. Whatever it is that we can do for you, I want to encourage you. Make the need known by coming forward while we stand and sing. Todd.